Welcome to the Sports Zone on WHRU LP 101.5 FM Huntley Community Radio. I am your host, Anthony Collada, and we are back with another packed weekend with the Red Raiders starting their football season. We still got news around the MLB, some NFL preseason news as the final week of the preseason wraps up, and we've even got a little bit of some MLB signings. So as we jump right into it with our kind of our best part in sports this week, and I want to use it as a shout out to Shaquem Griffin, who just retired from the NFL. He only played four seasons, but the special thing about this player was he was the first NFL player to make the league with only one hand. And he went to UCF, I believe, University of Central Florida. And coming out, he really went viral in the pre-draft time of his career, where just showing off benching with one hand, all these different workouts, and you can always tell that he was one of the most hardest working players out there on the field. And you know, with one hand, you have to put in that effort to really just stand out if you are in fact kind of behind that eight ball, to say. And here, he only played 46 games across four seasons. He racked up 25 tackles, all of that time coming with the Seahawks. And I think the Seahawks was kind of the best place for him to be drafted. His brother Shaquille was the corner with the Seahawks at the time of being drafted. He is now in Jacksonville. Shaquem Griffin, he kind of bounced around a couple of teams, practice squads. He was with the Chiefs at one point, just, you know, never quite made the starting lineup. But that's not even the story here. It's the fact that a player with one hand made it to the NFL, survived for 4 years, made an impact, and just, you know, really creating a role model for younger kids to, it doesn't matter what your limitations are, just go out if you've got a dream and go do it. So that's my best moment in sports, is just a shout out to a player with the perseverance that not many others would probably have. And as we jump into the Red Raiders, they solidified a victory in their week one matchup against Crystal Lake Central, beating them 37-20. But the game was much closer, especially in the first half, than that score, that final score might, you know, kind of tell. And it really, the changing point on the season was when Crystal Lake Central quarterback Jason Penza went down with an injury in the second quarter. He was sliding and a Huntley player dove into him, and it later came out that he broke his throwing arm. And Penza, one of the top quarterbacks in the conference this season, goes down in week one with an arm injury. So very unfortunate there. But for the Red Raiders, you know, they took advantage of their opportunity with a backup quarterback in the game. And for Crystal Lake Central, their backup quarterback was George Dimopoulos, who is actually their leading receiver. So at a Crystal Lake offense where you lose your starting quarterback and then your backup is your number one receiver, so now you've lost your number one quarterback and your number one receiver, it's going to be a tough time for the whole offense to adjust, and they definitely did. Dimopoulos fumbled a snap that, you know, backed up on his own end zone, fumbled it into the end zone for Huntley's Joey Arvidsson to pick it up for a touchdown. And then on the very next play after the, you know, extra point after the kickoff, on the next play, Dimopoulos and their running back Vince Honer fumbled the handoff, leading to another fumble recovery for Arvidsson. So it was just kind of two quick plays with a new quarterback in the game that really just flipped the script for the game, and then Huntley just decided to run away with it. And I mean literally run with it. Hayden Janke racked up 29 carries for 168 yards and a touchdown on Friday night. And then quarterback Sam DeLegio also added two rushing touchdowns. So, you know, not a whole lot of fireworks going on through the air, but the Red Raiders just running it down Crystal Lake Central's throat, wearing them out as the game goes on with you know, two key players on their offense, either out of position, you know, whatever. But who knows where this game would have went had Penza, you know, not gotten hurt. I mean, the Crystal Lake Central offense racked up 296 yards of offense in the first half before he got hurt. So, you know, Raiders were losing up into that point. So who knows kind of how that game would have played out. But, you know, like Raiders coach Mike Niemola said, you know, you got to play with the situation that it is. You know, it's unfortunate. He hopes that, you know, Penza wasn't badly hurt. Unfortunately, it came out that he was. But, you know, all you can do is go out there and play against the players on the field and do what you got to do to solidify a victory. And that's what the Raiders did. So they go up 1-0 on the season. And now the home opener on Friday against McHenry. The Huntley Community Radio will be back on the broadcast. I'll be doing the play-by-play with former Huntley Red Raiders football player Thomas Benner on the call with me as the color guy. So be sure to tune in if you're not able to make the game for that. So that one should be a good one as well, and I'm looking forward to it. Now as we jump to the Cubs, they took 2 of 5 against the Cardinals. Javier Aced made his major league debut in game 1 of Tuesday's doubleheader last week, and you know, I think he pitched about as well as you can expect, especially going against a Cardinals lineup as deep as it is, with Goldschmidt and Arenado hitting the way that they are. He went 4 innings, allowed 4 hits, 4 walks, and struck out 3 on way to the Cubs winning 2-0 in that game 1. So, you know, new guy, get them out there on the mound, start getting these guys innings, see what they got against these major league bats, because especially with the Cubs, you know, you see a lot of teams like this, but the Cubs, next year's starting rotation is very open. So continue to give these young guys a chance to solidify themselves, prove themselves that they can make a run for the rotation, if not the bullpen, for next year. So a good outing for Aced. He'll be back on the mound to begin this week on Monday. And then in the second game of the doubleheader, however, did not quite go the Cubs' way. Adrian Sampson was lit up. He allowed 5 earned runs on 8 hits in only 3 1/3 innings. Paul Goldschmidt jumped the yard twice in that game and also hit a double. That one was all Cardinals as they beat the Cubs 13-3. So 2 of 5 for the Cubs against the Cardinals is about what you'd expect. I mean, Cardinals at the top of the division, Cubs middle to bottom of the division. So, you know, you like to see him continuing to play hard, continuing to get these young guys some reps, but unfortunately, it's just sometimes you're going to run into a better team. And that's what happened with the Cubs Cardinals this past week. And then they traveled to Milwaukee, where they were only able to take 1 of 3 against the Brewers. And the win came Friday night, basically all because of Ian Happ. The Cubs had 2 hits in the game on Friday. Ian Happ hit 2 home runs and drove in 4 RBIs, and the Cubs won 4-3. So Ian Happ beat the Brewers on Friday, and then Milwaukee went on to handle the Cubs throughout the rest of the weekend. So, you know, Ian Happ, he was an all-star. He continues to prove it day in and day out why he's an all-star and why it continues to look like a better and better decision to keep Ian Happ on the Cubs. Upcoming schedule for the Cubs, they've got 3 against Toronto in Toronto, so something to keep an eye out as this series kicks off. What Cubs players are not going to be in the lineup? I heard that it's supposed to be anywhere from 3 to 5 players that aren't going to be allowed to play in Toronto due to the COVID vaccination statuses. So I haven't gotten a list of those players. I'm not sure who they are. So we'll see, you know, if you start seeing a guy not in the lineup Monday, maybe it's an off day. And then if they're not in the lineup Tuesday, Wednesday, okay, now you're starting to see that status. So I guess that's just kind of a wait and see. And then after Toronto, the Cubs stay on the road for 3 against St. Louis. So 3 more against St. Louis. So two tough series coming up for the Cubs. You know, just continue to find what's going to help you out in the future if you're the Cubs. And then a little side note for the Cubs. Pat Hughes was actually inducted into the Cubs Hall of Fame on Wednesday. Pat Hughes is the radio broadcaster for the Cubs. He's been doing it for so many years. I'm pretty sure is at least since I've been alive. And honestly, a great honor. He's already won like Broadcaster of the Year and almost any other broadcasting award that you can win. And for someone as an aspiring broadcaster, Pat Hughes is someone that I've always loved listening to, looked up to. So a huge congratulations to him. And it's just, you know, another milestone that he has been able to knock down. And what an honor to be inducted into a Hall of Fame for a team like the Cubs with such a rich history. So good for Pat Hughes. I love to see it, probably more than most Cubs fans, but still, you know, a great thing to see for the city of Chicago. And then on the South side, the White Sox really struggled this last week, losing 6 of 7. Their only win came on Wednesday against Baltimore, and Gavin Sheets had himself a night. He had 3 hits, drove in 3 RBIs, and then Lucas Giolito was dominant on the mound. He went 6 1/3 innings, 4 hits, only allowed 1 earned run, struck out 3 and walked 2. So another good starting pitching performance from Giolito, who continues to be pretty solid. You know, he's not quite the AL Cy Young candidate that he was a couple of years ago, but still a very solid middle of the rotation, you know, middle to top of the rotation kind of guy for the White Sox. So going to need that down the stretch for them. And then they were swept by Arizona, which that's really ugly. Arizona's not a good team at all. And unfortunately, Dylan Cease was hung with another tough no decision. He went 8 innings, only allowed 2 earned runs on 2 hits, and struck out 8 and only walked 1. But unfortunately, Kendall Graveman was unable to hold the lead in the top half of the 9th, and Arizona went ahead and hit a go-ahead double. White Sox weren't able to score, so Cease, another fantastic pitching performance, but hung out to dry with a no decision. Struggled. The White Sox struggled this week, and now they find themselves 5 games back of Cleveland from the top of the division, 2 games back of Minnesota from second place, and 6 games back of Toronto for the wild card. So they sit at 63-65. They've hovered around the 500 mark all season long. It's going to be tough. They've got 3 against Kansas City and then 3 against Minnesota. So especially that Minnesota series is something that White Sox players, fans, coaches really need to make sure that they can take 3 there and make up some ground in the division. And it's going to be a little tougher. They're going to have to do it without Michael Kopech, who just went on the injured list with the left knee strain. Quickly going back to last week, probably a good idea to take him out at that no-hitter. You know, he's been hurt. You know, he's never faced this many innings, and now here he goes back on the IL. Luckily not an arm, but still, you don't like to see it, especially how he's been pitching and the point in the season that you're at. So that's the White Sox. We'll kind of see where they go this week. They've been up and down, hovering around that 500 mark. And we have some Chicago Blackhawks news. After Pat Foley and Eddie Olczyk were removed from the broadcast booth for the Blackhawks, they announced their replacements this week, and it's going to be Chris Vosters doing the play-by-play and former Blackhawks Patrick Sharp and Troy Murray doing the color commentary. I don't know anything about Chris Vosters, and I loved Patrick Sharp as a player. My dog's name was Sharpie, named after him, but it's just, it's hard for me to get too excited about this broadcasting booth when two legends like Pat Foley and Eddie Olczyk, probably two of the best in the business, Eddie O is probably the best color guy in hockey, having those two guys replaced out of the booth, you can't replace the energy and the feeling that they brought to the game. So, you know, hopefully a whole new rebranding, new look for the Blackhawks, new sound now. So hopefully things can kind of start to turn back around for a Blackhawks organization that's kind of been put through the ringer over the last couple of years after such a successful period of time in the 2010s. So we'll see how that kind of goes with the Blackhawks. You know, they're probably not going to be a good team again. So, but some news on the broadcasting side of that. Quickly with the Chicago Bears, they beat the Browns 21-20, but really the only thing that mattered in this game was the first half, and it was all Bears first half, and it was all Justin Fields. Fields went 14 of 16 for 156 yards and three touchdowns with a 146.9 passer rating, which is almost perfect. He had touchdowns of 22 yards to Ryan Griffin in the first quarter, a 12-yard touchdown to Dante Pettis, who ran a fantastic quarter route in the second quarter that sprung him open, and then a 24-yard touchdown pass to Cole Kmet after Justin Fields rolled out of the pocket and bought some time. That one also came in the second quarter. So three nice touchdown passes from Fields, really getting that momentum going before the season starts. And the offense looked good. The O-line held up. David Montgomery looked healthy. He looked strong. He looked fast. And he looked ready to bang some bodies this season. So going to rely on that run game. And I'm loving the screen passing, the rolling out, the different formations and stuff that Luke Getsy is now introducing into this offense. Call games based off of your players. Don't make players play your game based off of your scheme. So it looks like through these three preseason games that the Bears offense is already going to be a much more well-oiled unit. They might not be better because some of the talent's not quite there, but they're going to be clicking on more cylinders than they were last year. And as we jump out to some overall NFL news, but before we do that, let's stop, take a minute for station ID. You're listening to WHRU LP 101.5 FM Huntley Community Radio. So some news around the NFL, and it's not great. Matt Ariazza, rookie punter drafted by the Buffalo Bills, has been accused of gang raping a 17-year-old girl like last year and a half. The details and everything, I'm not even going to bother getting into that. It's a terrible situation. It's nasty. And luckily, the Bills made the right call. They cut Ariazza. So now NFL can't do anything about it. Situation happened before Ariazza was drafted. It's out of the NFL's hands. So good on the Bills to cut bait with him right away. Now it's up to the authorities to handle Ariazza. And if everything that they're saying is in fact true and he was in fact a part of it, I hope he goes away forever, because that's nasty. That's terrible. It was a terrible thing that happened, but good on the Bills to cut bait, because here, he was the best punter in the draft by far. Dude can kick 80 yards, but you know, some things are bigger than football, and this is absolutely one of them. Sam Darnold, who lost the starting job to Baker Mayfield in Carolina, he is going to be out 4 to 6 weeks with a high ankle sprain. Tough break for him, but he didn't win the starting job. So as long as Baker Mayfield doesn't get hurt, Carolina should be okay. Some more bad news. Rookie running back for the Washington Commanders, Brian Robinson, was shot this weekend after an attempted carjacking. Luckily, his shots were all below the waist. I think he got one in the glute, one in the lower leg. So he's through surgery now. He's in stable condition, and they're even saying that there is a very good chance that he ends up playing later this season. So good news there. It's just another one of those things that you just ask yourself, like, are you kidding me? Really? Like, that happens? But, you know, luckily he's okay, and hopefully it's not too much of a recovery and he's able to get back out on the field sooner rather than later. J.C. Jackson, who just signed a big contract with the Chargers to play cornerback, he's going to be out for a couple more weeks. He was looking at a 2 to 4 week window after some ankle surgery. Minor procedure, cleaned some things up. He should be good to go, if not by week one, by week two or three. And then another tough injury for the Steelers, Deontay Johnson went down and had to leave the game on Sunday against the Lions with a shoulder injury. Deontay Johnson just signed a big contract. He's the Steelers' number one receiver. He runs great routes. He's fast. He catches everything. So that he's their number one receiver, and that's going to be a really tough break if he is forced to miss any amount of significant time. And then one more player that we need to talk about is former Chiefs quarterback Len Dawson, who passed away at the age of 87 this past week. And in 211 career games, Dawson collected 28,711 yards, threw for 239 touchdowns, 183 interceptions. He was a 7-time Pro Bowler, 2-time All-Pro, and Super Bowl IV champion and MVP. So, you know, a great career. Len Dawson passed away at 87. May he rest in peace. Over to the MLB. It's looking like the Angels owner, Artie Moreno, is trying to sell the team. Angels aren't a great team. They don't make much money. It's just, they've seemed to be pretty poorly run pretty much their entire, you know, history of being a franchise. They can't seem to really get too many good players. And then when they do bring in players, they're usually older, past their prime. You know, look at like Josh Hamilton, Justin Upton, guys like that, that were way past their prime, but still they shelled out big money for these guys. So we'll see kind of where that goes. And if a new owner can bring a different winning culture to the Angels organization. Some good news, though. Bryce Harper actually returned from the injured list after a thumb injury and basically picking up right where his career has left off, collecting a hit in all three games that he has appeared in so far since coming off the injured list. You know, another big bat right in the middle of that Phillies lineup to really help them try to make a push and stay on track with the Braves and the rest of the National League. And then a couple of signings, a couple of contract extensions. Tyler Glasnow signed a 2-year, $30.5 million extension with the Tampa Bay Rays. He is a top-of-the-line rotational guy, too. Came over from the Pirates years ago. He's been very solid, very consistent. Good for the Rays to lock that guy up. But the big signing of the week, Seattle Mariners outfielder Julio Rodriguez signed a 12-year, $210 million contract that could keep him tied to the team until 2039. He's 21 years old. He was the runner-up in the Home Run Derby. Hang on, wait. I said he was 21 years old. Make sure you get that. He's 21! He bats 264 this season, 21 home runs, 65 RBIs, 23 stolen bases with a 790 OPS. So he does a little bit of everything. He can hit for average. He can hit for power. He can drive in runs. He can run. He can play defense. He can throw. And this is kind of where the MLB is starting to go, is you find one of those players that you've got, there is no shot that they are going to even let him get close to arbitration, let him get close to free agency. So at 21 years old, they locked down their center fielder for pretty much the rest of his career. But, you know, we've seen the Braves do it with Ronald Acuna, Michael Harris, Ozzie Albies. I mean, basically the entire Braves lineup has been signed at a very early age, and now they're all through team control until, I think, the first big name that the Braves have that they lose is like 2024, so 2 more years from now. So starting to see that model kind of make its way through the MLB, that if you've got a young star, get them locked up right away. Don't even bother trying to lose them. And then some NBA news. I think we can finally put the Kevin Durant trade rumors to rest. It does look like he, in fact, is going to be returning back to Brooklyn, and the Nets are basically going to run it back with pretty much the same core group of guys that they were swept in the Eastern Conference Finals by the Boston Celtics. And then we also had a trade go on this weekend, as Patrick Beverley was traded to the Los Angeles Lakers. So the Lakers continue to add some bigger name players. But the bigger story there is what's going to happen with Russell Westbrook. I mean, if you recall, Russell Westbrook and Patrick Beverley really went at each other over the years in the playoffs. Patrick Beverley's defensive style really frustrated Westbrook at times. And, you know, they got tangled up at one time, even forced Russell Westbrook into having a meniscus tear. So, you know, two guys that have always battled, always played hard, they do have some hatred there. Do they find a way to kind of get rid of that those problems? Does Russell Westbrook end up getting traded out of town like there's been talk? So we'll kind of see how that plays out. But Beverly going to come in, play great defense, and bring a lot of energy to that Lakers squad. And then now that we wrapping up our show with a fun fact, last week, August 24th, was an anniversary day. So back in 1919, pitcher Ray Caldwell of the Cleveland Indians was struck by lightning in his Indians debut in the ninth inning. After he was revived, he stayed in the game and continued to pitch. And then, 17 days later, he threw a no-hitter. And then the next year, he went on to win 20 games for the 1920 World Series champion Indians. So the man was struck by lightning, had to be brought back to life. And not only did he throw a no-hitter in 2 weeks, he stayed in the game. That is definitely not something you're ever going to see ever again. You know, here, what are the odds a pitcher gets struck by lightning, first of all? But the fact that he stayed in the game after having to be brought back to life, insane. So just a little anniversary type of date there to put a smile on your face as we wrap up another great episode of the Sport Zone. And we'll be back next week with a recap of the Raiders game against McHenry and, you know, staying up to date around the world of sports. So we'll be back next week.